Welcome to the UFO File Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Hey, this is Jerry Pippin, and we're at the Cover Up Cafe, and we're in Roswell, New Mexico. And I don't know if you've seen we've got the story behind. I've seen a T-shirt with it on. I've seen the actual skulls across the street they're selling. It looks like the same skull that you both wrote a book about. This is Ray Young and Melanie Young. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. Glad to be in Roswell this year.
Now, where are you located,
Ray? We're in El Paso, Texas.
Okay. Now tell me a little bit about the Star Child skull. What are we talking about?
Well, this skull was found back in the 1930s by a Hispanic young girl who was in Mexico visiting family. She went into a mine shaft and found two skeletons in that mine shaft. One was a normal adult human skeleton. The other one was definitely misshapen and deformed. She did not know what it was, and she picked them up, brought them to the house. She wasn't supposed to have them, so she hid them outside. And then rain came and torrential rains, and it washed everything away. The next day, on her way, when they were trying to pack up to come back to El Paso, she was only able to recover the two skulls. And she brought those back and kept them all these years.
Let me get this story straight, Ray. If I understand it, they had a flood. Everything was washed away except the two skulls.
That was our understanding. We actually were not able to talk to the actual girl that did it. She passed away before we came in possession of the skulls.
And how did that happen? That you got possession, not how she passed away.
Well, she had at the time of her death, her family gave it to a friend of ours. At that time, he kept it for a while, decided he didn't want it, asked my wife, since she's a neonatal nurse, if she wanted to look at it, see what it was. She said, yes, sure, we want it. And so he gave them to us because they didn't want anything to do with it.
And they didn't want anything to do with it? Did they think there was a curse or something?
Well, they were both government employees, and they were afraid. They knew that it was possibly maybe alien, and they just didn't want the government to mess with their livelihood.
So, right off the bat, they figured it was an alien skull.
Yes.
How about the first time you saw it? Did you think it was?
It looked strange enough to be.
And you wrote a book.
No, actually, Mr. Lloyd Pye, our lead researcher.
Right, and Lloyd's here.
Yes, he's here at the conference. Right. He's here. He just finished writing the book. It's the first day of the initial publishing today. We have them over at the library annex of the museum. And he will be there to autograph them and speak about it also. We also speak about the skulls.
Now when we talk about this book, did Lloyd do a good job? I mean, did he cover pretty much everything?
He did an amazing job. It starts from the day we started with this project. We met him all the way through all the trials and tribulations we've had, ups and downs, all the testing he's done. He's been all over the world with testing. And it's written in a way that everyone can understand. It's in an autobiographical way. It's a story so that you can actually understand it instead of being scientific mumbo-jumbo that everybody goes, huh?
Well, do we know much about this alien skull?
Well, we do know that the Star Child, the mother of the Star Child, is human because we did get the mitochondrial DNA out, which is the DNA of the mother. We do know that the Star Child is a male. We were able to extract the XY.
You could tell that from the skull, huh?
From the chromosomes. But yes, we were able to get all of that out of the chromosomes. We were not able to get the father's DNA to actually show up on a test.
Well, you've done a lot of investigating and a lot of scientific investigation.
Yes,
and I guess that's because your wife's a technical person.
That's right. We all are. And the person we got, Lloyd Pye, is such an amazing researcher. We made sure everything step by step was scientific and not just guesswork.
Now, what do we make of all of this finding? This had to be some time back for it to be in the condition it was.
Well, under carbon dating, we found that they're 900 years old.
So that would push it back, in my math, back to 1,200 or so.
Right around there, yes.
Maybe 1150.
Something like that, yes. They weren't found until 1930-ish, in the 30s. So, you know, they've been well preserved, but they were also found in a mine, so they were out of the elements.
How do you think they got to the mine? I mean, does anybody have an idea? And you didn't find a body, any other kind of bones or anything? Just the heads?
No, just a complete skeleton. We found both skeletons.
Oh, did you? Yes. Okay, I didn't understand
both
that.
Both skeletons.
Well, tell me about that. Was it a little guy, big guy?
Well, what the lady found was when she went into the mine shaft that she wasn't supposed to be in, that laying on top of the ground was the normal skeleton, the normal human skull, and out sticking out of the ground was a misshapen hand. They were either holding hands or had his hand wrapped around hers or something. And so the girl simply just undug up the other skeleton, and then she found the entire skeleton that was totally deformed and misshapen. Again,
with the body part was not normal either?
None of the body looked normal to her. At least that's the story that we have.
Do you have just the skulls or all of them?
That's all we have is the skulls. After we said, after the torrential rains, everything was washed away. All she recovered at that time back in the 30s were the two skulls.
And nobody's come around, because people know about this by now. Maybe no, you just washed away and lost forever. Nobody found something.
Right. Well, realize
that we know of.
Right. Realize it's around 70 years ago. Nobody knew about it for 60 years. Why would they have gone down to look for them? They've been in the elements ever since. Animals could have got them. You have no clue where they'd be.
Now, tell me a little bit about what you folks do in El Paso, right?
Right.
Do you have a shop or something?
I'm a registered nurse. I'm a retired registered nurse, and I'm now teaching.
You can't be retired. You're too young.
I'm burned out. So I quit nursing, and I'm now doing massage therapy and teaching massage therapy and anatomy at one of the local colleges.
And what's your background, Ray?
Well, I'm an electrical engineer for 30 years, and I just retired, and I'm also a nationally certified massage therapist.
See, I thought I looked in great shape, and you guys are retired already, and I'm still going.
Oh, we try.
Well, we're still going. We're just not doing our conventional jobs.
Right. You don't have to go in and put the time card.
Exactly.
So what's your impression of Roswell here? And you've been here all week, I take it.
Yes, we've been here all week. We have thoroughly enjoyed Roswell, and it's a great place to be, and we are grateful that you guys have had us at the museum, and we'd love to come back whenever you want us.
Well, great. Have you come across any surprises or something's changed your mind since you've been here?
No, you pretty much
expected what you saw.
Right. We've done that, but we really appreciate everything the director of the museum has done for us. She's done a spectacular job setting everything up. And I really want to thank her personally on the air.
Yeah, Julie's quite a lady.
She sure is. She's been very wonderful to us.
And the UFO Museum, what's the latest? I hear they're going to build a new building or something.
I'm not much on to that. I heard her say something today about being finished in about 3 years. Okay. So that's all I know.
So but for the time being, it's going to be right down the street from the Cover Up Cafe, and it'll be there for a while.
Yes, sir. That's what we understand.
Yeah. What do you think of Roswell? What do you make of it? I mean, the incident itself, the crash.
Oh, it's been very interesting for all the years. We've kept up with it for many, many years.
And I imagine now at the UFO Museum, they're talking about the revealing of the hot affidavit, because Walter was quite involved. Do you hear any, most people, what are they saying about this?
You know, we've been stuck in the library. We haven't really had a chance to speak to anybody else about it. We get bombarded with the skull stuff that nobody's really even told us about it. Julie told us it was going to happen, but we haven't had a chance to talk to anybody else. By the time they see us, they're too enthralled with our skull to even worry about it.
And you're right there in the research library itself.
Right. We're in the annex, right in the back. Come on in. Tomorrow's the last day. We have the book to sell, which is a really great deal, and it's probably the only time you'll ever get, if you want, the owners to sign and the author to sign the book.
Now, is this book going to be for sale on websites? Or?
Yes, the skull is also there. We have the original skulls that have not been cut. Well, these have been cut on, and we have the two skulls that were found back in the 1930s. We also have the replica, so you can come touch and feel and look and see and actually see the differences in the two skulls.
Can you get the replica off your website, too? Can you order that?
They're $3,000 if you want.
Oh, well, will you take a check? No.
Cash cash only.
Okay, so but the book is available, and
the book is available. You can get it at the website, LloydPye.com or theStarChildProject.com or BellLab.com. Those are the three places you are welcome to get it at.
And we have links to that on our website. Thanks very much for coming by. Let's give the Youngs a hand here, everybody. An amazing story for sure. We're broadcasting from the Cover Up Cafe. We'll be right back. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com. Hello everyone, this is Jerry Pippin and we're broadcasting from the Cover Up Cafe in Roswell. And, of course, Roswell, New Mexico had something happen 60 years ago, and they're observing it, the famous UFO crash. And we've had a terrific time here. We're at the Cover Up Cafe right down the street from the UFO Museum in downtown Roswell. And we are going to kick off the show tonight with a very interesting fellow who has some credentials. He works with MUFON at the national headquarters. But you actually are in Northern California, aren't you, Chuck Reber?
I do two things. I'm chief investigator in Northern California for MUFON, and I'm also director of investigations for MUFON.
Now you have a convention coming up here in August.
We do, August 10th in Denver.
And it's been quite successful over the years, and you have a new director at MUFON, and really, I hear nothing but good things happening. Why don't you bring our listeners up to date on what's happening?
Well, I'll be happy to, Jerry. Last year, we had a new international director. Name's James Carrion. James is, he speaks fluent Russian. He speaks fluent Spanish, of course, English. He's former Army intelligence, and he's 42 years old, has a nice family, which we met today, finally, for the first time. And a terrific guy. If you ever had a boss, this is the kind of guy you want.
Yeah, that's what I understand. We've had him on the air, and he seemed nice enough on the air.
Yeah, this isn't going to get me a raise or anything. You realize that?
Well, no, we're going to double your salary.
Yes, I suppose so.
Yeah. In other words, most of the MUFON activities are more or less volunteered.
Everything is volunteer for MUFON.
Uh-huh.
But the assignments during the last year they've been quite a few. I was given the assignment a year ago to write a new field investigator's manual, and that's been completed. It's in edit now. Excuse me. It consists of investigative platforms plus information. It will be going online in our case management system very soon. I also developed a state director's manual. That's been done. It's been sent to the state directors. We get a lot of help with this kind of thing from the members. It's been a terrific year. It's been a difficult year, but MUFON is actually spooling up to do several different types of things.
Yeah, what exactly are you going to be doing? I know you've been famous for investigations, but you're expanding that area of expertise, I understand.
Yes, we are.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I'll be happy to. The standard investigation, which includes the Valley classifications, which your audience probably is not familiar with, consists of what we call flybys, maneuvers, close encounters, and anomalous lights. And we will consider that to be what we call a standard type of investigation. That would be a standard platform, and there are certain procedures we go through to develop information for that. The second platform we have will be an abduction platform. We have never gone in and investigated platforms as a policy of, or investigated abductions.
Well, this is quite a switch for MUFON,
very,
I think.
Very much a switch. The Board of Directors approved that last year. And then we're also going to have a platform for cattle mutilations and crop circles.
Well, you know, it sounds like you're covering the entire gamut. Originally, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but MUFON really kind of concentrated on the sightings themselves.
They concentrated on the sightings in the sky, whether they be lights or so on, and they really kind of left a lot of the important information from abductions and so on out of the picture. That no longer will be the case.
And I take it you sound enthusiastic, so I take it you think these are good changes.
I think these are very good changes. We're expanding the library. We're expanding our
So you have a library in Denver itself?
We have a research library in Denver.
A physical library?
Yes, very much like they have here in Roswell at the museum.
And in addition to that, you know, you've really made some great changes on the website, I think.
Very great changes on the website. We have 48 state directors, or I guess 50 state directors. We have a couple states without them, but that's being worked on. We have added about 40 new investigators since February of this year. I know because I grade the exams. And I can't tell you exactly how many investigators we have. But
by saying I grade the exams, I take it that not just anyone can say, hey, I want to be an investigator. You guys are pretty careful.
That's correct. We expect a certain particular grade of 80% on the exam. There's then a period of time of mentoring, where they are what we call field investigators, and later on they may become senior field investigators and so on. Also, Jerry, in the past there has been some talk that perhaps we didn't do quite as good a job as maybe some others in doing investigations. I'm not sure that's true. I think we've always done a really fine job. But we're going to become even better by doing what we call forensic investigations. And now by forensic, we don't mean that we're going to take tissue samples from aircraft or unknown objects or so on, but the term forensic means suitable for public opinion and public discussion, and also suitable in court. And we are going to do everything we can that will contribute to that. That is, we will have such a complete report that it cannot be arguable.
Now, when we talk about your area, Northern California, that's a fairly active area as far as sightings.
It's a really active area, all up and down the Central Valley, basically from Sacramento down through Lodi into Stockton, into Bakersfield, is extremely active with lots of sightings. As a matter of fact, the very first sighting in California was in 1896 in the town of Lodi and Stockton, right between those two towns.
Oh, yeah, Take Me Back to Lodi. That's a country song, I think.
Yes, I think so.
So all the way back to 1896, that even beats that 1898 sighting in Texas that people talk about.
Yes, they had that they had that sighting in Texas, and this was a particular airship that nobody had ever seen before. And every sighting that we investigate, it doesn't mean it's an alien sighting. It doesn't mean it comes from another planet or another parallel universe or whatever. What we do is we investigate and try and determine whether the object is known or unknown, whether it could be something else other than a known aircraft. We get into the rest of it later on, but that's basically our job, is to determine is it known or is it unknown.
When we talk about these sightings that go all the way back in time, it's hard to fathom that we didn't really hear a lot about them. But I guess it's just communications weren't like they are today.
We didn't have the internet way back
then. No, they didn't have picture phones, and you get a lot of pictures like that, I imagine.
Yes, we get a lot of pictures. One of the latest ones was kind of interesting. We had a cell phone image that had a perfect UFO in it, perfect saucer-shaped object. It came from Puerto Rico, and then we got another one from Bakersfield with the same object. We looked at the instrument that was taking the picture, and if you're familiar with charge-coupled devices, there's something called blooming. And blooming is what happens when a charge-coupled device, or we call them pixels now in our cameras, becomes overloaded. And evidently, the shutter mechanism in cell phones has such a configuration that if that particular set of pixels is overloaded, it looks just like a UFO. So we determined that that was an artifact of the
All of a sudden, with the digital technology, these artifacts begin to show up.
That's correct.
And a lot of times... people come and they say, well, I didn't see it, but it's on the camera. It's because it's an artifact. Probably.
That's right. And every sighting and every event we looked at very skeptically. We're not easy. We don't think that everything we see is a UFO. As a matter of fact, we think a lot of things we don't see are UFOs. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Out of the reports that you get a year, what do you think are actual sightings could be real? Is there a percentage?
I mean,
you'd have to guess.
That's really difficult to tell, but to say.
One out of five?
Yeah, no, I think Peter Davenport has said recently, and he has a National UFO Reporting Center, that he gets about 50% where people are calling in, their kids or so on, and their hoaxes. We are estimating with what we get, perhaps we have 1% that are hoaxes. We probably have 70% that are knowns,
But
there's a 30% that we truly cannot identify as any type of a known.
But you don't get a lot of hoaxes at all, isn't it? I said how?
Not that we can tell. And the reason is we send out investigators, and we call people. We document what we see. We get drawings. We get pictures. We have face-to-face conversations, which helps us to eliminate that type of problem.
So that probably is part of the test of MUFON when you take somebody on board.
That's correct. We expect a very high degree of professionalism.
I mean, it's more than three pictures of flying saucers and pick the one that you think is real.
You pick the one you think is real. That's right. Yes, there's a whole narrative that goes along with it. We also do what's a Ballester-Gauss program, and it's a mathematical reduction of the sighting itself, and it gives us an arithmetical number that helps identify, is this actually an unknown or is it a known object? So it's not only anecdotal evidence, it's not only pictures, it's also a little bit of mathematics involved here.
Tell me, you're using the scientific method, and more or less.
We're certainly trying.
Yeah. Tell me what's been happening to you in Roswell here. You've been mixing with people. We ran across each other several times.
Yes, it's
you
been great.
You run across anybody really interesting?
Rich, a story?
Well, they all are, aren't they?
Yes, they all are. We have stories. I had a woman come up today, and she was talking about an experience that she had in Texas as a young girl. And we have one of our MUFON representatives there, Yvonne Smith, who deals with missing time and so on. And so we promptly introduced her to Yvonne. So we're able to help some people.
What's MUFON's official stand on Roswell in 1947, or do they have one?
I mean, we don't have a really official stand on that. We know that certain things have occurred in the things that we know, which appears on our website. We have three things. I can't remember them all right now, but one is they are here. Two is they deserve attention and inspection and investigation. And that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, speaking of that website, you have real-time, people can post things right at the moment, right?
The public can go into our what we call case management system. They can immediately report any type of sighting. As a matter of fact, I take telephone calls 24 hours a day, bless my wife, and we encourage people after they talk to me to go on the website to go ahead and report the sighting. But we also, I take phone calls on sightings and investigations, and we have other people which take phone calls on other subjects.
Now when we talk about people reporting things and the sightings reports you get, most people think, well, it's in the middle of the night, but there's a lot of daytime sightings, right?
There's a lot of daytime sightings.
In fact, it may be over half. I don't know.
I would think so. I don't have any figure on that one.
Yeah. But it is a 24-hour phone number.
There is a 24-hour phone line. MUFON set this up about a year ago where we have four different places that somebody can call, and I take two of those. As I say, one is investigations, one is sightings and the test and so on. So we try and have a voice rather than a voicemail. And if I can't answer it, if I'm busy, it goes to my cell phone. If it doesn't hit there, it lands up on my computer with the number. It's in a WAV file, and we call people as quickly as we can. You know, I could be out of town. I could be busy doing something else.
You can still check it.
And we can still check it. And then we send it on. After I talk to the person, we send it on to our state investigator for him to take over or her to take over and continue with it.
I know you got a dinner engagement here in a moment. And we won't tell Gene Fraser and everybody at the Cover Up Cafe it's at a different place.
Oh, no, please don't do that.
Yeah. But I know you have to go. We could talk for hours.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I appreciate the invitation.
You got any final thoughts or something that we didn't cover you'd like to get out there?
No, we're just going to keep going forward and doing the best we can.
Okay, let's give him a hand. Chuck Reeves.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. This is Jerry Pippin, and we are at the Cover Up Cafe.
Hello, this is Farah Yurduz. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts and my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippin Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Farah's banner for the answers to the most personal question. We are here at the Cover Up Cafe in Roswell, and it's the 60th anniversary celebration. It's going strong. It's on Saturday night. You've got two last names, Patricia.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we put a hyphen between those two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell our audience exactly your full name then.
Patricia Johnson Holm.
Patricia Johnson Holm. I thought it was going to be like Patricia Johnson Wax, but maybe you're related to the Johnsons. They got a little money.
I'm related to certain Johnsons from New Jersey, but, well, that's another story.
Yeah, we won't get into that. Tell us why you're here in Roswell.
Well, you're going to find this a little surprising. And they say that they have not heard from the aliens, and yes, they have. I was on the crash, was born into a baby's body in Longview, Washington. That's why the Kenneth Arnold sighting was so key to what was going on overhead when being born. There was a UFO that actually saved my mother's and myself through the birth process. There is so much behind this that it's just tremendously hard to get quickly and easily.
We're covering a lot of territory here in two or three sentences. Let's back up and let's go one step at a time. Tell me again exactly what you're saying here. The Kenneth Arnold story we're aware of.
Yeah, that's on Murray Island. All of this is connected to the birth on July 9th, 1947.
That's when you were born.
Yes, in College General Hospital, Longview, Washington, on July 9th, 1947. Within minutes, you'll see that there was a telegram sent to Truman about the birth, and they were scared, to put it simply. And there was really nothing to be scared about, because what this is all about on Roswell, and this is what I've been trying to say. This is the first time, by the way, I've even been able to start to speak out, and I've never even known about the conferences in advance to be able to go, if I were allowed the funds to do it. But it's been a very cloistered situation, not wanting this information out. And what you want to look at is who's behind that. What do they think they have to gain? Because what Roswell was really all about is Roswell, Rose is well. This indicates that the rose is well. What is the rose? It's the white rose of the House of Stuart, but more concisely, the blessing of the House of David. You will find that the abductees are from the House of David for the most part. That's why it's generational, and it's also very spiritual.
Now you're saying that only people from the House of David lineage are the ones that are abducted?
No, that's the majority.
Okay.
And you will find, just as your guest, previous guest, I suspected, and so asked him, and he said, yes, I think I am from the house of David. You see, that is considered the lost tribe of Israel. Actually, Judah.
So you have that lineage.
Yes, I'm of the house and lineage of David.
Mm-hmm. And so, is this your first trip to Roswell?
Yes.
And how's the reception been when you come in and start talking?
It's my first trip in this body. I've actually been here, and I've been explaining to other people what is located where, and I really appreciated Philip Mantle bringing out what he did, because he verified what I remembered happening in the crash. So I really appreciate his speaking out in the manner
he did.
What
do you remember happening on the craft?
Well, it was rather devastating, to say the least.
Do you feel comfortable enough to tell me a little bit about it?
Well, I can get into it. It'd take a while to explain, because the location that they're showing is not the real location where it took place. What you really want to see has to do with the shooting or the blasting site. You'll find that debris would be at that location, and that's not, the ranch is another area, and it's some more symbolism too. But what's important is the shooting it down due to we're trying to force down the Corona craft. It had body parts in it. We're trying to call attention. There was a pilot in the air at the time.
Now you're saying the craft that crashed had human body parts?
Yes, Corona had body parts in it.
How did you draw that conclusion?
Well, we had analysis. And we've had a lot of technology, although now, that craft
who's,
was...
Who's we? United States?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
No, they have nothing to do with...
Explain this to the listeners.
Well, my background was Pleiaden, and it's not pronounced correctly on the U.S. manner of pronouncing it. But what is important is that my background is not really of importance. It's the message that's important. And when you say...
And what is the message exactly from Roswell?
The Roswell is here to help you help yourself. And when people do not want you to have that information, then you want to ask them, why not?
Well, do you have an answer to that question, why not?
Yes.
And what is that?
Certain control factors. Think the ones that are putting themselves in control.
Are we talking like an MJ-12 or?
Oh no, much beyond that.
Who's in control here? Who wants the control?
You're going to get to the Council of the Nine, which you're never really told about. You remember the pinnacle of the pyramid? It has to do with that. The very top echelon of the pyramidal structure are actually in control. Bush is not in control. Cheney is not in control. And even for the top of the Jesuits, they're not really in control. They just would like to think they are, and they're going according to that, thinking that this is the way to the new world order, this is the way to the new dawning events, and they're trying to use what is actually supposed to happen in a totally twisted manner and opposite of what should be.
When we talk about this... What can we do 60 years later here? I mean, what's happening here? I mean, what is your overall message?
Well, okay, notice...
You said the message was the thing.
The message has to do with coming to fruition of Revelations 20, 1, 2, and 3. It is very spiritual-oriented. And also part of the message is even the King James Bible has been tainted by man. You need to reprocess and go through every word and add the rest of it back in. God does not approve of 66 books.
Now, where do you go from Roswell? Back to Washington or what?
Seattle, Washington, yes. My program is Call for Investigation on the Internet each Thursday at 5 Pacific time. And we have covered the issues that the mass media does not cover.
Now, what... What internet station is this on?
That just go to ScanTV, that's scantv.org, and you will find it video streaming on Thursdays at 5 p.m.
Okay, and we'll link to that. We thank you for coming by.
Thank you so much.
Okay, let's give her a hand, everybody. And we'll watch for you on the tube.
All right.
This is Jerry Pippin. We'll be right back.